This is Theremin 30. 30 minutes of Theremin music, news, events, and interviews with a new episode about every 30 days. Now, here's your host from Denver, Colorado, USA, Rick Reed.
Hello, and welcome to possibly the only regularly scheduled podcast devoted to the art and technology of the Theremin. This month, we've got plenty of both, with kind of an unintentional theme of duos. Three of this month's four music tracks are from duos, and my interview guests are a duo of RCA Theremin restoration experts, Andrew Barron and Mike Buffington of RCATheremin.com. Let's get right into the music with the Italian duo Tears of Sirens from their current album Flow. Here is a beautiful track called Into My Veins.
Broken life I need now.
We finished that set with Kirkyard Greyfriars, a track named after a 16th century Scottish graveyard. It's the current single from Bloody Red Roses, the new music project from the German duo of Gilda Rezani and Hans Vonning. Be sure to check out the fascinating and beautiful music video for Kirkyard Greyfriars on the Theremin 30 playlist on YouTube. And we started that set with Into My Veins by Tears of Sirens, the Italian duo of Giulia Riboldi and Fabio Properzi. You can find out about these performers and all the musicians that appear on the podcasts by clicking on their names in the show notes at theremin30.com. Let's take a look now at the calendar of Theremin events. May 23rd marks what would have been Bob Moog's 86th birthday. To help celebrate the day, thereminist Randy George will be participating in Moogmentum in Place, a live streaming event hosted by the Bob Moog Foundation. A lot of other concerts and events, of course, have been canceled or postponed due to the pandemic, but some have moved to an online streaming format. So check the calendar occasionally for the latest updates. There are links on our website, calendar.theremin30.com. Coming up after the break, I've got some brand new music from Duet for Theremin and Lap Steel, and it's for a good cause. I'll explain when we get back. The Theremin 30 podcast is supported by affiliate programs with Eargasm Earplugs, eBay, Reverb, and Zounds. When you follow these links and banners on our website, a portion of any purchases you make will help keep this show in the ether. So start shopping at theremin30.com. Atlanta, Georgia-based experimental musicians Duet for Theremin and Lap Steel have a new album out this month, and they're donating all proceeds from digital downloads to a couple of local charities, Giving Kitchen and Atlanta Musicians Emergency Relief Fund. There are links to both organizations in this month's show notes. Let's listen to the title track, Helicline. Thank you. That was Helicline, a new recording from Duet for Theremin and Lap Steel, featuring Scott Berland on the former and Frank Schultz on the latter. Coming up, I'll be visiting with RCA Theremin restoration experts Andrew Barron and Mike Buffington. Plus, I've got music from the only non-duo on this particular episode, the Lothars, so stay tuned. Hey, this is Rick Reed, producer and host of the Theremin 30 podcast. Did you know that you can advertise with Theremin 30? You can place banner ads on the website or even get a commercial played right here in the middle of the show. It's a great way to promote products, services, and events to the Theremin community. And honestly, this show does not have a huge audience, at least not yet. But that means it doesn't cost much to get involved. You can find rates and details at theremin30.com. My special interview guests this month are the experts behind the RCATheremin.com website, Andrew Barron and Mike Buffington. Andrew and Mike have been restoring and repairing vintage theremins since the 1990s. They also manage a list of the remaining RCA theremins known to exist around the world. Andrew and Mike, welcome to Theremin 30. It's great to have you on the show. So, Andrew, you're in New Mexico?
Correct. Santa Fe, the state capital, up in the north part of the state.
And Mike, you're in New York City.
Yeah, I'm in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
How did the two of you get together to create the RCA Theremin Registry?
Andy and I met because I was working on a replica theremin, and I posted my results and progress and updates to what was then the LevNet email server, where people would chat about theremins. And I had said that I had created a replica RCA theremin. I didn't get any replies, so I was a little bit surprised because I figured that would be an interesting thing that people would be excited about. And then it just must have been overlooked by everybody. And I wrote again, and then people responded. And one of those responses was Andy. And Andy basically said, hey, let's talk. This is something that I've been wanting to do for years. The project for me was a very beginner project. It was my first experience in electronics in general, but of course, first experience in vacuum tube based and vintage electronics. So Andy and I got together over the phone a bunch of times, and he helped me with how to do live electrical tests without electrocuting myself and things like that. Because I basically just sort of looked and saw the service notes and said, well, a wire goes from here to there, so I'll add a wire from here to there. And miraculously, when I turned on the instrument, it did make noise, but it wasn't perfect.
He got it to respond to hand gestures. It actually was a basically functional instrument. The octave pitch range was needing some improvement. It was too quiet. One pair of wires were transposed, and there's nothing in the service notes that would lead you to know that. With a simple correction there, all of a sudden he had adequate volume, and from there the instrument could be refined to perform as a real RCA would. So that was quite an accomplishment for someone without prior electronic experience.
I was living in Tucson, Arizona at the time, going to university, and Andy was in Santa Fe, so we got together and started just sharing our knowledge and passion for the theremin.
And out of that, the idea for our theremin website to support owners and enthusiasts of RCA theremins and the first generation theremins made by Lev, Leon Theremin, the inventor himself, came about. And then the registry came a little bit after that.
In some ways, the registry's been around longer than RCATheremin.com. We have sort of adopted it from TheremonWorld.com, where it was being run by Jason Burrill. We asked him if he would be okay with us moving sort of the official registry to our site.
There were only, what, 600 or 700 made originally?
There were 500 made originally.
And you've been able to track down a pretty large percentage of them.
Well, when we adopted the registry from Theremin World, I think it was about 40 or 70.
It was 40, so that's 40. Only 8% of the total production. It had accumulated a total of 40 submissions from owners of RCA Theremins to add them to the Theremin registry.
And while Andy and I were collaborating from about 2006 or 7 to 2010, he and I were independently keeping track of any Theremin mentions we had seen for RCAs on eBay, on posts online. Just through the grapevine. When we launched our website, I think we had around 70. So we added ourselves about 30 instruments, give or take.
Now it's between 26 and 27% that we're showing on our website as survivors.
Yeah, we're at 130 theremins now.
One of the cool things I like about your registry is we get an address attached to each instrument. For example, the Pavec Museum in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I've gone to Minnesota just to play that instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you and me both.
It's great to be able to have that resource for people that want to seek out those historic instruments.
Yeah, that was a fun addition. I think we had launched the website, but we were talking, and Andy sort of just took a screenshot of a map and said, wouldn't it be great if we could see where all that exists? So I dug deep and learned how to use Google Maps, and on our registry, we have a little icon for blue RCA theremin that would be in a museum, and then black icons for privately owned theremins. And so we sort of generalize the privately owned, so you can't just go exactly to that address. But for the museum ones, we do have it almost to the location in the building if we can. We have a little disclaimer saying, don't just go there and assume that it'll be on view. But we try to keep that as up-to-date as possible. I'm glad it's being used for that reason.
One of my trips in the last couple of years was to the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix. And you both, I think, had a hand in a couple of the theremins on display there?
Yeah, both of the RCA theremins there. We've been involved in both of those instruments in different ways.
One is Clara Rockmore's instrument, and I don't remember where the other one came from.
I remember seeing the other one before online. I think we knew about someone wanting to sell it, then the MIM purchased it.
They had contacted me to inquire about whether they should get that instrument. They sent photos of it, and I made an observation of a modification that had been made. For museums, it's certainly important for them if an object they're exhibiting has been changed in some way so that they can use that as an educational element in the presentation. And so I brought that to their attention, and there were two or three emails and a summary of notes that I made from the photos they sent, and then that ultimately led to their acquiring that one.
The RCA theremin has such a mystique and a popularity still, even though it was a commercial flop at the time it came out.
I think the RCA theremin specifically is so highly sought after is because it is a design straight off the blueprints of Leon Theremin. He designed the instrument. So it has all of those characteristics of his early instruments and some of the characteristics in terms of voice of the instruments that we know of and think of when we think of the theremin. We think of Clara Rockmore's sound, and the sound generating components are the same in the RCA theremin, even if it performs differently or behaves differently.
Clara's instrument, as you can imagine, was hot-rodded to the nth degree by the collaboration of Theremin working with Clara. And most of that, if not all of that, actually came after the RCA Theremin was manufactured. But as Mike said, the RCA Theremin actually holds the distinction as being the only manufactured theremin in history to have been designed by Theremin himself. Beyond that, I think a lot of people who became aware of the lore of the theremin through Stephen Martin's film Theremin and Electronic Odyssey imprinted on the look of the RCA theremin in that scene of the instrument slowly rotating and dramatically lit. That's certainly what I think captured me and probably Mike as well, that there's something you want to just get your hands on that. And so thousands of people around the world who've seen the film would have had this sort of visceral experience that's visual, as well as we learn more about the sonic qualities of various theremins, find that's really the holy grail of the theremin world.
Now, is there any danger in working on these instruments?
Any vintage electronics that uses vacuum tubes by necessity has a high voltage power supply. So you do have lethal operating voltages, both the line voltage that comes into it, and that gets stepped up through a winding and a transformer to hundreds of volts more. And of course, we have the element of a 91-year-old electronics that it's going through. And with RCA theremins, our hope is that they have remained relatively untouched, which means that the delicate fabric-insulated original wiring is still intact and safe. But many of these instruments have been handled oftentimes by people who are not well-versed with antique electronics and how delicate things can be. And a lot of damage can occur, you know, even if their interest is there and their passion is there and they're sincere about what they do, they may handle things wrong. That can introduce hazards. this was one of the main reasons why we began to fast track the introduction of our website. We were aware of a historically important custom-built theremin that had a connection with Theremin's laboratory in New York that was not restored to a museum standard. And so we decided that it was time to get more meaningful information out there for people who might be involved in these instruments.
We do have some safety hazards that we mention in bold red text. We also have a section on our site about how to set up the theremin, how to operate it for safe and playable use.
How do people get a hold of you if they need some help with their theremin?
They can go to rcatheremin.com. That's rcatheremin.com. And our email address is experts@rcatheremin.com. Also, anyone listening who has maybe an RCA theremin that they haven't put on the registry, we'd love to hear about it. We'd love to hear about its history, serial numbers, photographs, etc.
Both of you, thank you so much for the work you've done to promote and preserve these beautiful and historic instruments.
Thank you for your interest.
Now, let's wrap up this episode with a Massachusetts band that has not one, but four thereminists. From their year 2000 album release, Oscillate My Metallic Sonatas, here are the Lothars with a track called Hooray for Dane. We've made it through another 30 minutes and another month of all things theremin.
I want to thank Tears of Sirens, Bloody Red Roses, Duet for Theremin and Lap Steel, and the Lothars for allowing me to play their music. Also, my thanks to interview guests Andrew Barron and Mike Buffington from RCATheremin.com. Coming up in the June episode of Theremin 30, I'll have new music from Finland, and my interview guest will be Urs Gaudens, creator of the Open Theremin Uno. Until then, I'm your host, Rick Reed. Stay safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Theremin 30 podcast. Visit Theremin 30 on the web at theremin30.com.